Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us. We have an incredible guest tonight, Christina Pratt, who is a shaman, teaches shamans, and wrote an encyclopedia of shamanism, which I'm having a wonderful time reading. So we will be with Christina in just a few minutes, but first, tonight's metaphysical musing. One of the things about the perspective of everything is energy and everything is connected and kind of watching and feeling what's going on is you notice correlations between things that other people don't notice. So if you're an emergency worker, you know experientially that on the full moon, things are crazier. People are crazier. Wacko stuff happens. It's a busier night. But most people don't go around realizing that they feel different on the full moon or how that affects, or it's a very intense full moon, or any number of other things that people that are sensitive and do this kind of work might say. So it's the full moon tonight, which is a perfect night to talk about shamanism because the energy is very, very high. It's the time of the month when the energy is the highest. It's the full moon. In addition, we're in the middle of one of the biggest solar flare storms that's ever been recorded. Everybody who tracks that kind of stuff is freaking out. And we're in the middle of also a photon storm, which isn't directly related to the solar flares. And all of that can affect both the power grid and electronic devices and cell phones and GPS and all kinds of toys that we now have up in the atmosphere. It also affects all of us. So our energy and our emotions are being yanked around by both the full moon and all of these solar things that are going on. We've got both lunar and solar influences. And people write to me, I especially like it when clients write to me and say, and things are just crazy and I don't know what to do and there's all this stuff going on, blah, blah. And I said, yeah, and it's the full moon and a solar storm. I can't really sort out for you what's going on for you at this moment because we can't account for the fact that this is such a high energy moment and it's going to affect your emotions and everything that's going on around you and in your life. So most people go through life and just feel like things happen to them. Feel like, oh, I don't know why I feel this way or that way. Or why did this person do this or that? Someone who's doing the kind of work that Christina and I are going to talk about tunes into the energy and listens to what's going on and says, oh, this is an interesting time. I wonder what the effect is going to be and how it will affect me and how it will affect my work and how it will affect my clients. So people ask me, how long does a clearing take? And I tell them, I don't know. Because sometimes I can sit down and just spend hours doing clearings. I just sit with the notes and I do one after another, and I'm perky and I'm just cruising along. And then I get to one particular one, and it won't necessarily be something that seems intense or complicated. You know, every once in a while I get jobs that a whole bunch of other practitioners have looked at, and then it's like, we'll get Mikey. Only in this case, it's we'll get David. Maybe this guy can do something with it because he gets results sometimes that other people don't. And I've got a few of those sitting on my desk. And sometimes those are really draining and complicated, and sometimes they're not, you know, abandoned psychiatric hospitals and things. But sometimes it's somebody that doesn't look like they're a personal clearing that doesn't look like there's anything much going on, or a place where it doesn't look like anything much is going on. But I get drawn into it, get drawn into a deeper trance than I normally would. It takes more energy for me to do it. And when I'm done, I'm done. And sometimes I'm done for two or three days. I just can't work. And then I get back into the cycle and I can do it again. So how long does a clearing take? Well, on average, not very long. But there are some of them that knock me out for quite a long time, especially if it happens on the full moon with solar flares happening. So there's a lot more going on affecting how you feel, your emotions, your physical health, all kinds of things that most people will ever factor in. And part of the work that I do is taking into account all those factors and attempting to straighten it out so that you're not having those dramatic effects. So on this full moon, that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And now we get to have some fun with Christina Pratt. You with us, Christina?
I am. Thank you, David.
And thank you so much for being with us. I'm really excited to talk to you, partly because, you know, I would say you did your homework, but in this kind of work, it's way more than homework, because you've been with shamans all over the world and studied. You can tell us your story about how many different places you studied and how many healers you studied with. But in addition to that, you've done this very scholarly work of pulling together information about what's being done and has been done all over the world. So I'm very excited about hearing both how you got here, what you're doing now, and more about the process of writing the book.
Where should we start?
Yeah, I was just thinking that. Well, tell me about your work. And I know part of your work is also teaching. You have a program for shamans, but tell us about your work.
Well, my work happened really very organically, and I always feel like every step along the way I was the last to know what the step was. So, like, oh,
yeah,
this is what we're doing now. Lovely.
I know exactly how that is.
I began shortly after my sort of initiatory crisis that happened in New York. Very quickly after that, after coming out of that, I chanced, of course, upon an interview of Sandra Ingerman talking about her soul retrieval book back 20 years ago or 25 years ago when she wrote it. So this was a while ago. And had one of the many very clear moments I had clustered close to that initiatory experience went, This is what I'm here to do. And so I moved into shamanic healing following this feeling of a connection to doing the soul retrieval aspect of the whole complement of shamanic healing.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much just asked people who seemed to know, you know, what do I need to do this? Because that was the clear piece. And I was really just trying to put one clear foot in front of the other and mm-hmm. not step on the not clear parts. And so I learned to journey, and I learned to do soul retrieval work and all the sort of basic healing forms that the Foundation for Shamanic Studies teaches. But as soon as I, because my initiation had happened prior to that, so I already had a relationship with my initiatory helping spirit, as soon as I had some skills to, in essence, have a better working relationship with spirit, so it was a little easier to communicate with me, and I could grasp what was going on a little quicker, and you know, my skill level was rising there, because I feel like shamanic skills at their most basic really just extend and clarify and amplify the intuitive gifts we all have anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to do the shamanic healing work, and as I began to work with people, I realized that they were getting better, healthier in leaps and bounds, but they didn't have the skills to live that way. You know, they still had the skills from their family of origin that were fairly codependent and addictive and problematic, and they were healing out of that, but they didn't exactly know how to relate with themselves, how to relate with other people, how to relate with the world, how to relate with their work. I mean, it didn't work anymore, and so I started teaching just life skills. And that all evolved into then teaching, as I got sort of better at listening to spirit, better at understanding shamanism through just doing the work, and then better at teaching people through teaching individual skills, teaching people to journey, teaching people about their energy body, you know, just really basic stuff. It became easier for the helping spirits to begin to communicate to me that there was this larger body of teaching that they wanted me to do. Now, not that anyone said it to me that clearly in the beginning. It was kind of more like, you know, the Hey Mikey thing, hey, why don't you do this? And I get involved in this whole week-long workshop thing and create something because I was working with spirit that I had no idea what it really was and what it was doing for people. And eventually I had to put my little shamanic foot down and say, look, you need to tell me what you're getting me into, because I'm not doing this anymore until you do, because people's lives are changing and I don't really know what's going on, you know. And so after that, the helping spirit started being even more clear about this whole body of 4 years of teaching. And so that's how I got sort of the three parts that I do, is the shamanic healing work and then just basic life skills, and then this four-year training, which is really not so much about training shamans as it is about giving anybody the opportunity to heal and learn the skills necessary to realign with their soul's purpose. If that happens to be expressed well through shamanism, I'm happy to teach you the healing forms. You can go off and be a shaman. But it's really for anybody who wants to live a meaningful life that is, you know, utterly about living and expressing their reason that they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my sense, if we tie back to shamanism and shamanic healing, is really the core of well-being from a shamanic perspective, is that you're here doing your work, whatever that work is.
Right.
And that becomes really the core of your well-being. So it kind of came around full circle then that way.
Well, it sounds like you've come up with much more than just doing the shamanic work, because you've added a coaching component, you've added assorted other things. But, you know, I love your description of your arguing with spirit, because people think this stuff in some, I don't know how people can think this, they think that, you know, somehow you get to the point of doing this and it all kind of just flows and it's wonderful and mystical. And, you know, I can't tell you how much of the time I spend with guides and other beings that I'm dealing with going, what? You want me to do what? And why are
really?
You?
What? Are you sure?
Well, really also, I can do that. But, you know, a lot of it is, no, wait a minute. Tell me this again. Why are we doing this? Isn't someone going to get hurt? You know what? What? And drawing out of the beings that we communicate with the information that we need to be able to step up into something that we've never done before and seems totally off the walls, but also get enough information to be able to carry it forth. So, you know, people ask, what's shamanic training like? And I say, well, apprenticing is like randomly being thrown in the deep end of a swimming pool, and your teacher watches to make sure you don't drown.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, pretty much any question you ask, they won't answer, because that'll be up in your head and thinking about it, and it's about the experience. It's about knowing you can have the experience and go back and have another experience. So it's being desensitized in a basic way, being desensitized to very strange things, to the point where you can just have all kinds of strange things going on and go, okay, so what next? Or be confronted by some entity that everybody else would go running off screaming and go, are you sure it's a good idea for you to be talking to me this way?
and sometimes I ask, could you give me a way to say this to this client that they can actually receive this information?
Right.
Because this is just way too weird even for me. So can you clean this up for me, please, so that this person can hear this and work with this? Because I'm big on people actually following through and integrating what they get, and they can't do that if they can't conceptualize it or even connect with it. So that whole translation piece is tricky.
It's very tricky, especially since a lot of the information that you're getting in the moment is intuitive and basically saying, okay, I can do this, I get it, but not being able to put it into words.
the putting
well,
it
in. It never fails that with the people that actually understand shamanism who come to me as clients, I get this really normal, like in the reign of shamanism, normal healing. And then with the people that are really sort of, you know, skitsy about it, but they know they need to do it, I get something totally bizarre and off the wall. And it's just like, couldn't you just make this a nice normal soul retrieval for this poor person the first time? You know, why are we having to? Anyway, it's not fair.
Because it's a reflection of the person's energy, and their energy yeah. is whatever their crazy scramble thing is. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's not helpful when you're trying to figure it out. You know, one of the ways that I have taken a step away from that problem is that I work remotely and the client is not on the phone with me. So I do what I do, and then I inform the client of what I experienced, what information I have to bring back. But I don't have someone sitting in front of me typically that I have to explain it to.
I've actually found doing long distance work similarly. It just simplifies a certain element, and I can often, you know, sort of get more done with less of an energy expenditure.
Right.
Still more information.
Less energy expenditure. You can do it on your own schedule,
don't have to be having a good hair day.
Right. And if you've seen my picture, I never have a good hair day. But yeah, it's not only a good hair day, but being able to, in the moment, come up with the right way of expressing things so it's emotionally satisfying for someone, which can be a real challenge. And if you're busy, it's, you know, as I was saying, on days when I can just crank stuff out, it's pretty funny because I'm just sitting here listening to music, doing one after another, after another, after another, which I couldn't possibly do if I was having people come in the door somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how no matter who it is or how you learned it or where you are in the world, it always winds up being exactly the same kind of issues.
Yeah, you know, people. I think we just have our contemporary versions of the issues humans have always had.
Right.
And I think we're actually creating some new problems. But we certainly haven't solved any of the old ones.
Right. And, you know, one of my half-joking perspectives is that most of the things that go on that don't work for people are because they're still living in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the emotional, the way of dealing with the emotional issues doesn't necessarily mature, and it winds up being the same struggles that happened in high school.
Yeah, one of the things I work with a lot with people is patterns, is to get out of the event that was problematic and begin to look at it as a pattern, that there have actually been many of these,
right,
you know, new versions of the same event, and try to get people to be willing to drop down and work with a pattern. Because if we can get a hold of a pattern, we can pull a whole lot of stuff out. But this event-by-event thing is, it's better for therapists.
Right, therapists and coaches.
If I had that kind of patience, I'd be a therapist, and I'd actually, you know, be able to bill for what I'm doing.
Yep. So tell me, one of the things that has happened for me in the last couple of years is people asking to apprentice with me.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my flip answers is, well, you need to start 30 years ago and apprentice for several years so that you can safely do the things that I do that you think are glitzy and fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this whole range of things you need to experience before you can deal with the dark stuff. And, you know, it's half joking and part of it's really true. But there is a way that you can work with people starting them from the beginning, and there's a way that you can work with people that already are talented and have some experience. You've worked out a way to do apprentices with people, so I'm really curious what you're doing in that realm.
Well, I feel similarly. I don't actually feel that taking people off the street, teaching them the journey, and then teaching them healing forms is a way to create great shamanic healers. I don't work that way. What I do is, if someone wants to actually apprentice with me, they need to go through the 4 years. And in that 4 years, I get to watch them, because each of the years deals with a different aspect of the person. Mm-hmm. They get to see where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are. And through those 4 years, if they're working well in those 4 years, whether they're beginning or advanced, they'll bring themselves into a kind of balance that should support what I consider the kind of foundation you need to live in to do shamanic healing work well. I don't think shamanic healing, the forms themselves, are that hard to learn. They're just really hard to do well because it requires so much personal work, and they're being taught right now completely stripped of any sort of personal work, personal development, anything. Right. I mean, those people that are still in their emotional 18-year-old phase can learn how to do shamanic healing and think, because I can do these healing forms, that proves I'm a shaman. And the healing forms are easy, actually, relatively speaking. What's really hard is maintaining a quality of life so that your interpretation of, like we were talking about in the beginning of the show, is actually accurate and not just you talking about yourself.
Right.
And, I mean, we're not getting these absolute truths when we connect with spirit. We're interpreting those truths. And they're different levels of truth based on our capacity to comprehend the truth. And so someone with an 18-year-old emotional development really can't comprehend a very high level of truth. And right. So my perspective with apprentices is I have to see that they can commit to this being a certain kind of person, and then given that, I'm happy to work with them as apprentices at that point. And so far it hasn't really worked to bring someone in who feels that they have enough experience to jump those steps, because the steps in my 4 years are not so much about shamanic healing skills as they are about the personal development, really waking right. up to yourself. And then within that are also the shamanic skills that we're learning, are all the other skills of living shamanically. How do we actually live in community? How do we work with the elements? How do we do ritual and ceremony and all of these things in your everyday life, so that there's this whole sphere around the person of skills and understandings and transformation that allows them to bring the shamanic healing work into shamanic context versus mm-hmm. I'm a medical doctor and I went off and did a weekend with, you know, Foundation for Shamanic Studies, and now I'm a shaman too. You know, it's like, what? So that's how I work with people, is they really do have to, you know, jump over a few hurdles to get to a place of actually apprenticing. Again, because if you don't want to do that, there's 100 other people that are happy to teach you right off the street.
Right.
So you don't need to be with me. If you want to be with me, then you got to put up with me. and there are standards of, and that's the other thing, is that there are, each year has standards of, this is the level I'm committing to do this thing I just learned. Every day, not just at the workshops when everybody's on their best behavior and everybody's happy because someone else is feeding them and they don't have to worry about doing the laundry, but in your everyday life, you're committing to treating everyone in your life at this standard of interaction or whatever. And that's a lot for people who can just go learn it 2 years over there without having to do any personal work.
Right. And the other thing is, how do you walk through the physical world and just walk down the street and talk to people when you've got a lot more information about what's going on the street with the people, with you, on the planet? How do you integrate into what's considered normal life?
Yeah, I watched this woman in Kathmandu, this amazing healer in Kathmandu, do that so beautifully. And her ability, because the other thing about being over there in that part of the world is there's lots of people that have caste systems and certain people don't talk to each other and, you know, different gender biases and things like that. And she navigated all those waters so well, and how to do her role as a quite renowned shaman in this very complex, multicultural, big city. And and literally part of her practice was walking through the streets and shopping and then stopping in to that bar because the husband of somebody she just saw in her clinic that morning was there drinking up the family income and berating the bartender for letting him do it. you know, this whole community piece. So she's like doing the community piece of the work, the community healing, by going out there shopping and getting the food for dinner. And, you know, and it's beautiful to watch.
Exactly. We're coming up against a break very soon. I want to make sure people have a way to contact you if they want to take a look at your site and hopefully not find Viagra. Because I know your site got hacked today. What's your website?
So the website is lastmaskcenter.org. LASTMASKCENTER.org.
Terrific. And all your contact info is there.
Yes.
And we're going to be going to break in just a minute. We'll be back with Christina Pratt here on Empower Radio with the Farkas Files. Don't go anywhere. And I'm going to give the call-in number when we come back so people can join the conversation. So we'll be right back. And don't miss the public service announcements because they're hysterical.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Romaine. As a former model, I used to walk runways all over the world. Paris, Milan, New York. This is Salif Diarra. As a local health worker, he walks the pathways of his village in Mali, West Africa, every day to help treat severely ill children. Like many children in the developing world, those in Salif's village are threatened by common illnesses that kill millions worldwide. But unlike villages without a local health worker, the children in Salif's village get the care they need to survive. And even though you can't walk in his shoes, you can help him with his work. Help one, save many. See where the good goes at goodgoes.org and find out all the ways you can help get the good where it needs to go. Brought to you by Save the Children and the Ad Council.
Sassy! This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg. Ha-ha, I win. Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound health and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. And I got to tell you, the sassy public service announcements are my favorites, and I sit here laughing all the time. So we're back with Christina Pratt, and I want to give out the phone number for people to call in and join the conversation. That number is 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. So, Christina, when last seen, we were talking about walking the streets of Kathmandu. And I know that you've been in all kinds of places all over the world. And if I understand correctly, you've studied all over the world with healers and shamans who in indigenous cultures all over. Tell us a little bit about all the places that you've studied and also the places that you went in learning what you needed to for the book.
Well, in terms of studying, I just felt because I had really learned these healing forms, kind of disembodied from living the life of a shamanic practitioner, because I'm a little girl from Oregon, you know, public school, college, all that stuff. I had no idea. I wanted to see practitioners working in the context of their culture and ideally cultures that really hadn't been too disturbed by the introduction of my culture into their life.
Right.
And I have a pretty profound relationship with Ecuador in terms of that land actually waking up my spirit. I was there as a dancer, and I had a real kind of spiritual awakening there, and then returned focused on shamanism later. And so that was really the first place that I began to experience shamans working in their way. And not all of the ways that people work in their own culture translate back into the States and into America. I mean, these shamans were working with ayahuasca. It's not legal for me to do that here. So, I mean, there's lots of really big things that change. But for me, it wasn't so much the specifics as it was watching how that person functioned in their life, with people, in the rituals and ceremonies. Anyway, so there's Ecuador, Nepal, and Kathmandu, and seeing it, and in that, observing both Tibetan shamans, because of course they don't get to be in Tibet anymore, and then Nepalese shamans working, and different kinds of shamans that are initiated by kind of this wild traditional shamanic initiation where the initiating spirit actually steals the soul and keeps it often for years teaching. And basically the soul doesn't come back to the body fully until they've learned enough to escape the initiatory helping spirit. It's kind of a wild situation. You have to prove yourself. And in the meantime, the body is either just kind of in a trance or just sort of sleepwalking through life and really not vital until that spirit really comes back. Anyway, there's lots of different versions of how people come into shamanism, and initiation is always something I want to understand and learn about from people that are working, because I'm someone who was sort of spontaneously initiated outside of any kind of shamanic culture, and I was trying to understand what happened and what to do about it and what did it mean, and could I just go get a real job, or was that ever going to work again? And, you know, I mean, I no one who spoke English would answer any of my questions, you know, so I just had to go watch. And so there was that, and then I also spent some time working with Maladoma Somei and traveling to Africa, and that piece was really significant for me in terms of learning some deeper skills of how we need to be working with the elemental energies, and on one hand, but also how to work with ancestors and how to make sure dead people become actual ancestral helping spirits and don't just hang around here as dead people, because hanging around here as dead people is problematic for the dead and for the living.
Right.
And one of the pieces that's been really evolving in my healing practice over the years is how do we address the need for ancestral healing? Because if you look at traditional shamanism, if you say the ancestors, it's a universally good thing because they are ancestral helping spirits, they're a wealth of information, on and on and on and on. Because the people, the living, made sure the dead got where they were going and could come back as ancestral helping spirits. So
right.
It was all good. We're not doing that, and we haven't been doing that for several thousand years, and so there's a whole bunch of dead people wandering around, and that's a problem, and it's causing health problems, and it's showing up more and more as the source of the problem as I'm divining what's going on in people's lives. And so since it's not a traditional problem, there's no traditional shamanic healing forms for it, and so one of the things that I've been innovating for my own work was how do we address this in a thorough way. Versus, it's really easy to clear it. You talk to your helping spirits and clear it for the client, but it doesn't necessarily clear the whole line, and so it just gets handed down to the descendant.
Mm.
And so what I've been looking at is not only how do we clear it for the client, but how do we clear it from the source, which could be, you know, 14 generations back. I've gone back to, like, warlords and, you know, original people and things like that. It's a long time ago to get to the real source of this pattern that's been evolving and sort of rotting a little bit and getting a little more twisted. And it's like, no wonder we have so much weird psychology in people today, because it's all this unresolved ancestral stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really fascinating for me, because I get to explore something that no one told me about. And working with the Africans, because they have such rich traditions about making sure every single dead person gets where they belong and really comes back. I mean, in the people that I worked with, every house has an entire room that is the ancestral shrine.
Wow.
And, you know, and so it's a really big deal, and that really helped me understand something, because as an American, I was as disconnected from my relations as any other white person straggling around America. You know, where did your people come from? Oh, well, a little bit over here, a little bit over there. You know, no records about the actual ancestral land they come from, because they were indentured service that got thrown on a boat, you know? I mean, it's
right.
It's complicated for us. And how do we navigate that and begin to reestablish? Because back to that whole idea of living as a shamanic practitioner and that whole sphere of energy, part of that is good relations with your ancestors.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, as a regular everyday American, we got to do some cleaning up. Because there's a bunch of dead people wandering around that got issues, and they're still pissed off at their brother, or they're still, you know, think so-and-so owes them whatever, and still acting like the 18-year-olds. And, you know, that's got to get cleaned up if we're going to get to that place where we have this full and unrestricted access to this rich legacy of the people that have gone before us and struggled with the same kind of struggles we did, and have much greater sympathy for those human struggles than I find with my other helping spirits, who never think rent is important, ever. You know, I mean, they just, like, these machinations of contemporary life, they could care less.
Right. Right, and then there are the ones that tell you to do things that will kill your physical body.
Exactly.
It's like, no, wait a minute. I have a body. Do you remember bodies at all?
Yeah, could I have an answer that won't require wings, because I don't exactly have them in this lifetime? Thanks. No, great answer. Can't do that without dying. Thanks. Can I have another one? I mean, it's like, hello, human. Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful, though, that they think of us as spirit, because it retrained me how to think of myself.
Right.
At the same time, I have to remember to go, great answer, but can I have one that won't kill me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's, you know, that's kind of mostly, I might be forgetting somebody, but that's mostly the training, you know. But because I have been working as a shamanic healer since this all happened, I never have any money. And so traveling was years of saving to be able to pay, you know, the airfare and the ability to go and have these experiences, because I never was cool enough to, like, go join the Peace Corps or something like that. I mean, I was a complete nerd. I would have never done something like that to put me in an environment and live for 20 years with these people. I was too much of an American girl, I guess. So it always took me a lot of time. So there's always years of integrating it before I could save up enough money to go and visit the next sort of culture that I seemed to be guided to go to learn something from. So it was a long, sort of slow process. With the contract for the book, because I didn't write the book and look for a publisher, I got asked by a publisher to write it.
Mm.
So it had a structure, and in that structure there was a certain limitation. And that limitation was to research already published work. So there wasn't.
Okay.
And I drew from my travels and drew from my experience and tried to bring to that academic work the perspective of a practitioner, which is partly what's unique about it. But it wasn't like there was a whole bunch of money to go travel around and research things.
Mm-hmm.
But there are pieces in the book that came from me hunting somebody down who really actually understood that culture, because I was pretty clear the research, as much as there was wrong. And I just knew it because my helping spirits were saying, no, yes, that person spent their entire academic life arguing about the green rattle and the red rattle, but it really didn't matter. So you need to find a human from that culture who can speak the truth here.
Right, and observers who are not having the experience can't possibly understand it, especially in a culture where they don't have the skills to translate it into something that's linear enough for a researcher to understand.
Yeah.
So, my interesting challenge.
Yeah, my publisher was really helpful. He said, you know, you're writing an encyclopedia. You don't have to prove anything. You just say, this is what group B says, this is group A says, this is what the practitioners say, and then this is what you're saying. And that you just get to present all those ideas because it is an encyclopedia. And that I kept being reminded of that, and that helped me get over those hurdles and not have to figure it out for the book. I mean, I could figure it out for myself, but...
Right. Yeah. Well, part of what I'm enjoying thoroughly about the book is all the front matter where you talk about what is shamanism, even the preface where you define shamanism, and how it's different from other things that get confused with shamanism, kind of sorting it all out. And you have a way of expressing it that is thoroughly clear. And, you know, you say some things that are really close to the things that I say, but you say them much more clearly, which is one of the advantages to sitting in front of your computer for months working on something.
Years.
You know, I totally get that you got to craft this, and it's beautifully crafted. And as I mentioned to you, I will be quoting the book, especially the stuff I've already read in the first section, because it's so well written and expressed, and also because it gives people access to a resource if they really academically, intellectually want to kind of wrap their head around a whole lot of information quickly. It's an incredible resource. Doesn't make you a shaman, obviously.
Right.
Because that's all experiential. I remember when that was, you know, that was pounded into me. I was driving home from something totally unrelated to shamanism and was going basically past my teacher's house. And Spirit said, go talk to him. I'm like, what? So I go and knock on his door at a random time. He's like, why are you here? I said, I don't know. They told me to come. And his phone rang, and they're screaming on the phone. He says, it's okay, I'll be right there. And he starts rummaging for stuff in a drawer, and he says, so you want to do an exorcism? Like, well, I stopped by for some reason, you know. So we get in the Volvo, and we go to this place, and it's a much longer story, obviously, but... we get through the experience, and if you looked at what was going on, it's two white guys sitting on two couches meditating with a Hispanic woman screaming in the middle of the room until she wasn't screaming anymore. And so all of it was internal. All of it was telepathic. And we got back in the car, and I was like, I had all these questions, and he just let me prattle on for a while, and then he said, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
He just would not let me go up in my head. He would not give me an answer because that would take away from the experience. And the whole point to it was you had the experience. Now you know you can do that.
Well, and part of the thing that people don't get about shamanism is it is what it is because these are the things that worked. It's not because people had this big belief system they wanted to keep reinforcing. They were like, man, this doesn't work. We're not dragging this around anymore. Let's try it this way. And and for me, I know a lot of people think talking about any of this energy stuff and everything is the epitome of not practical. But for me, there is no practicality in life without this shamanic perspective added in to the other practical ways of looking at life, because there's a whole bunch of life that doesn't make sense without it.
Right.
And a whole bunch of problems that just keep repeating themselves without it. And that's not practical.
And most of the standard explanations for those experiences in life are unsatisfying because they're not accurate.
Well, so they don't work.
and they don't work. Which, you know, an exorcism is one of them. We could have a long conversation about about that, because there are perspectives. There are circumstances where the traditional Catholic exorcism works, and there are many, many, many circumstances where it just creates drama and it doesn't work. And without a way of sorting it out and knowing what the appropriate response is in that particular situation, it gets quite intense and doesn't necessarily get results. And it's the same with everything that every religious point of view is going to put out there. There was somebody early on who knew what the answers were, and they tried to express it to people that didn't have the experience, and it got written down, and people refer back to the book, which has been translated into multiple languages, but they're not getting the original teaching from the person that had the experience. And it's all about the experience. And gets very frustrating listening to what some people say and just trying not to stand there screaming, going, "No, no, you don't get it." No, because they'll never listen to you anyway.
Well, and then the other side of that coin, I think, is the sort of new age needing to mystify and make everything all strange and unobtainable and obtuse. And my feeling is these very real things are magical in and of themselves. It is innate in these experiences if we allow ourselves to have the experience. I don't need to make it magical. My job is try to get somebody into the experience. It's a really very practical, unlike,
right,
you know, the transporter person. And that once the person's in it, they'll get the magic, the awe, the wonder, the amazing, unbelievable love the universe has for them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's not my job. You know, and for me to make all that stuff up just sounds silly.
Right.
And so that's the other thing that people don't get is I don't need to make it special. It is. I just need to help you get there.
Right.
So that's how I look at my job.
And the other thing about New Age stuff is, you know, if you surround it with white light and you think about whatever you're, you know, the joke is always unicorns, that everything's going to be okay. And there's nothing bad because you're focusing on the light. And it's like, oh, no, you have no idea.
I'm always concerned when the unicorns come in as a helping spirit. I'm like, really? Do I really have to go there?
Right, but you know, as soon as someone says everything's fine if you do this, I go, "Oh, you haven't seen anything yet, have you?"
Right.
You know, there's all kinds of stuff going on out there, and it's not all sweetness and light, and it's not going to respond to that.
Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking that there's probably some movie that could be made about, you know, the shaman as the equivalent of spiritual Rambo. people just don't get the confrontations that go on.
I have to admit, I kind of like those journeys, and I always wonder.
Yeah.
Something a little off about me about that, but I like
and
to feel like I was an action adventure hero for a little while. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, people that are gamers say, "Don't you play games?" And I go, "No, my life's a video game. You don't understand. I go to strange places. I meet strange people. They give me the key to things I've never seen before. I do that every day. I don't know. Games? What are you talking about?" They don't understand that underlying the created reality of the game concept, there was a real reality that it was all based on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the shamanic experience, is going out into that. Part of what's become my specialty is cleaning up some pretty dark stuff.
Yeah.
And after a while, it gets comical.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of working with people is asking the question they need asked and learning something I had no idea about before.
Right.
I love that part.
Right. Where you get into the middle of it and something shows up and you go, "Oh, this is real?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Or, oh, that's how that works."
Right. Or, "Who are
wondering.
You guys? Really? No kidding. Tell me, what do you do? And how come I haven't seen you before? And, you know, do you blow up if I touch you, or are you going to help me? What?" Yeah, it's
one of the weirdest things I ever experienced, though, was going after a soul part into a non-human realm, like utterly and completely non-human. to the point where I said, how long will I exist? Can I last here? And my helping spirit says, not very long. Get with the program here. Like, do what you're here to do and get out, because you can't be here very long.
Right.
And it was very hard to do what I needed to do, because I use the fact of being a human to track things. And it was a non-human realm, so all of my emotional tracking abilities were useless. I mean, it was really challenging, because I had to just sort of stop being a human and try to figure out how to not be human and track, all in, like, very short period of time, like, you know, a minute or two, because otherwise I would expire there. Like, this is so strange. I'm glad I've never been there since then. But it was interesting to realize there's realms like that.
There are actually places on the planet that have protection put up by dark forces that are like that. You know, it's like, oh, wait a minute. If I go through that with a body, I'm toast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to figure out a way to do this. You either have to shift my frequency, my friends, so I can go in with you, or I'll figure out a way, but it's not happening right this minute. And then, you know, the usual response is, oh, yeah, you've got a body.
Yeah. Oh, that thing. Yeah, a little attached to it. Yeah. Well, and then I have to admit, there's another school of thought in shamanism, which is the shaman is able to heal everyone by taking the illness into themselves and transforming it.
Yeah.
And to an extent, there is some of that sometimes, but I'm not really of that school of thought. I really don't want to die of my clients' illnesses. And everything I ever read about the most powerful shaman from wherever was they died a hideous death of, you know, riddled with cancers and icky this and awful that, which were really just the energies of their clients they couldn't transform, and that you get overwhelmed by it. And I just was like, no, not an option this time.
Yeah, and same thing with trans states. We've got a few minutes till close, and I want to make sure that everybody has your contact information and knows the kinds of things that you offer and how to get in touch with you.
Okay. So it's lastmaskcenter.org is the website. And assuming you get to the website and don't Google it, but you go straight to it, you will see that through the website you can schedule healing sessions. You can schedule. I'm in Portland, Oregon, so if that's not close, you can do long-distance sessions. All that can be scheduled through the site. And it talks about different kinds of shamanic healing. And then there's explanations about the life skills classes and about the workshop. And through the calendar, the things that are being offered right now are explained. And you can usually register for things through the calendar or email email through the website. And then there's also lots of free teachings at whyshamanismnow.com.
Fantastic. We're running out of time, and obviously we could talk for hours. So I'd like to invite you back at another time, and we can continue the conversation.
I would be delighted. Thank you, David.
This has been great. We will have another shaman next week who calls herself Saint Susan Baltoser, and I'm very curious why she uses that tacked onto her name. We'll find out next week. If you're looking for me and my work, you can go to househealing.com. All my contact information is cleverly on a tab that says contact, including a link that lets you schedule a phone conversation with me, and I do a 20-minute assessment and reading for free. So you can call and we can see whether my work will be helpful for you. So it's househealing.com. So we will be back next week, same time, same day, on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio.